and welcome back to the latest episode of the Master of None podcast. I am your host, as always, Stephen Murphy, joined by two sweaty men just like me. A lot of sweat going on, absolutely disgusting, but we can't complain. It's good weather. We rarely get it, so let's enjoy it when we have it. Plenty of rugby to talk about, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, South America. A little foreshadowing, Wesley's going to probably go off on that. But before we get stuck into that, Sam, you're rocking a vest again. Don't want to get into it. But you know what? It's actually warm enough. I'll allow it this week because it's bloody hot out there. How are you?
It's too hot even for a vest. Like, I'm too hot. I'm melting. I'm not Mavericks. Like, I love a hot holiday. Like, I love a Portugal or a Spain or something, you know, near the sea, chilling out. But like day-to-day stuff, I went out and I was going to mow the lawn. I was like, nope, that's not happening. Brought the daughter for a little walk around Oran Mór, went into Tesco, spent an obnoxious amount of time in the freezer section of Tesco because I was like, oh, what more can I look at just to cool down a little bit while I'm here? It's crazy hot. I believe today is the hottest day and it's going to be raining tomorrow when we plan on going golfing though. So there's always that.
It's close to the hottest day ever in Ireland, isn't it? I think like 32 degrees or something like that is the hottest
day. Yeah, somewhere in Roscommon. So that's a good little Connacht kind of stat there. Somewhere in Roscommon has the hottest recorded temperature in Irish history.
That is, you can hang your hat in that. That's some good facts right there. Yeah, I was in a shop yesterday as well, and they had like some AC going on. And like, if they had looked over at me, I was just standing in the one aisle, not even looking at like goods or anything to buy. I was just standing there in the glorious cold air for too long, Sam. Definitely for too long. Westy, you know, the long hair, the beard, Westy, it's got to be pretty hot to be Westy right now.
Yeah. I always knew this was going to be a trying time. It was the same last summer and my hair wasn't quite so long and I wasn't quite as beardy. But it was the main motivation for many's a shave, which may be the way going forward. Although with the hair this time, I'm more committed this time around. But yeah, the beard might go. You never know. I decide when I wake up in the morning. It just depends if I have time. If I'm bored, I'll just shave.
You're not shaving. You love it too much. You're too deep down the rabbit hole this stage.
I have a wedding next weekend, so I need to be looking tweet. So shaving and perhaps even a trim on the old hair as well.
How formal is the wedding? Because I was at a wedding a couple of summers ago and it wasn't this hot, but it was very hot. And I was wearing the suit and Jesus, suit on a hot day. Like there should be a rule, weddings, like you can be as formal as you want or whatever, have your dress code. But if it's a hot day like this, everyone just gets a pass and you can just wear whatever you want. Because it was not right to be in a
Where
hotel.
Where is the wedding, Wesley?
In Clochjordan in Tipperary.
Oh, so yeah, it could be piss and rain for next week. We don't know.
Yeah, but the suits are heavy. So if I say anything like this, I'll die.
Random thought just came into my head. Nothing really gets said about Jesus having long hair and a beard. You know, in pretty hot country where he came from, why did he not shave it off?
Because he was rocking on a bedsheet for most of the time.
Also, why was he always ripped in like pictures? Like that guy had a six pack.
Why was he always white in pictures? Put that out there.
Where do you also get people called Peter and John in that part of the world? That never gets brought up either. But you're absolutely jacked. Westy, is he your inspiration? Because you kind of got a Jesus vibe going on.
Is he doing a bit of CrossFit?
When I first met him.
Great pun.
When I first met my partner's dad, when she spoke to him afterwards, I was in the car and I was just chatting through the window. But when she spoke to him afterwards, his exact words were, cool guy. Kind of looks like Jesus. And I was like,
it makes sense now. You do look a bit like Jesus. Or would you rather be called Jesus? What would you rather be called?
Anywhere. I like to be somewhere on the Jesus Barry Gibbs spectrum. That's kind of what I go for.
So a stalwart of every Irish home anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. You never want to be too Barry. You never want to be too Jesus. Somewhere in the happy medium. Yeah. It's always good. Yeah. Never thought about it that way. Westy, you were away over the weekend in London. As I said, this is the part my mother loves, hearing about everyone's weekend. So Mammy Murphy's listening. Westy, do not disappoint. And please keep it PG.
Yeah. Well, I was over with my partner and her family. She was receiving her MBA from the University of London, so we were over for her conference, so congratulations if she's listening. So it was great to go over. The weather was unbelievable. It was beautiful blue skies, and it was a lovely, it sounds bad to say, but it was a lovely dead heat. Like there was no humidity, there was a little bit of a breeze, so it was quite comfortable walking around. We had dinner, we had a few drinks, we went to see the Tower of London. It was a beautiful day to be out along, outside looking at this stuff and traveling around the city and just doing bits and pieces here and there. It was great.
Did you go on the underground?
Only when we arrived to get to the restaurant where we're meeting her parents, and then we walked everywhere from then on.
The underground.
We got an Uber once or twice, but yeah, the underground was tough.
In the summer is just so hot. Disgusting.
New York probably four years ago at this stage. The subway during the summer is just, yeah, it's like an oven. And everyone stinks. It's just not a good scene.
Wave of hot air that comes whenever the train is about to arrive and smacks you in the face. Oh, it's miserable.
See, the first time I was ever on a metro underground was in China, and you might be surprised to learn it was very well air conditioned. It was far more comfortable than walking around outside.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good point. Right, we got some rugby to talk about, boys. Ireland are the best team in the world, and by a wide margin, we're never going to lose a game again, lads. Any problems with that statement?
Nope, factually correct.
I don't think there's any historical record of any team ever peaking too soon or getting too confident about a year out from a World Cup. I don't think it's ever happened.
I'm ready to hurt again, Westy. You know what I mean? as anyone who follows golf, I'm a lifelong Rory McIlroy fan. It's been a lot of hurt the last 8 years, and this weekend was no different. And I blame myself. I bought I have whiskey in the house. I bought some ginger ale as his first celebratory drink when he won on Sunday, and I jinxed him and he lost, and it's my fault, Rory. So if you're listening, first of all, please come on the podcast. I'll be immediately retiring after that. But secondly,
imagine
I apologize.
Rory was just a lurker, like he didn't come on, but he listened intently.
Oh man, that would be actually the worst possible scenario. It was actually if he listened and then never met a public. But yeah, that was sorry. I should have mentioned that in the opening. This will be the last ever podcast because, as I said to Sam, I'm giving up on sport. Life is meaningless. Art is a lie. That's a goddamn right. And yeah, it's just pointless. Why do we get so emotionally involved? And also, we're Connacht fans. As if that. So like, the future's not getting any brighter, guys.
I grew up as a Liverpool fan in the 90s. So there is an end. It does come eventually. But yeah, it's hard week in, week out when those sort of disappointments compound on each other. And the Rory stuff is even harder. Like, you're looking at the stats from the Rory. The match that over the week, and if just phenomenal round, still fall short because someone just played the best round of golf that ever got played. It's
someone,
sickening.
Someone with a shitty mullet and a phenomenal pubic mustache.
If he played in the wing for Connacht, we would have episodes devoted to how good his mullet is. You're giving golf. You're giving golf a different set of standards.
He's playing at the home of golf. It couldn't be more like an etiquette-driven sport and like scenario. And then this guy rocks up with a mullet and literally four strands of hair on his upper lip, and calls it a mustache and wins. I'm just bitter. I actually like Cam Smith, but he's going to live, so fuck him. Regardless, we're back to the rugby. Sorry, guys, got a tangent there. Westy, we'll talk about the third test or third match. Singularly, and then we'll talk about the series as a whole. But first of all, going into Sunday, Saturday morning, were you confident? There seemed to be a bit of actual quiet confidence about the Irish fan base going into that match. Were you feeling similar, or were you fearing that backlash that I think I feared also?
I was kind of I was a bit in between. I was kind of fearing a backlash. I was definitely really impressed with what I'd seen from us. I think, like everybody, I kind of didn't really let myself believe that we could win two in a row or win the series against the All Blacks. I did think, you know, based on kind of other times where we've beaten them, like, you know, like Chicago comes into mind, where the following week they just come back at us and they're, you know, like they're relentless in their attack and the way they go about things. But no, I think one of the key factors was, again, and it happened in all three tests, and okay, I know we didn't win all three, but like we scored within the first 5 minutes, and that automatically puts your tail up, you know, and then I think another thing for me was could have been later when Jody Barrett misses that penalty. You're like, hold on, like, you know, like you start to see a little bit, hold on, they're not quite, like they've worked really well down the pitch, but not everything is clicking into place for them. But yeah, definitely, I wasn't comfortable. And even, you know, when Ari Savea got that try after half time again, I thought like, oh God, this is bad. And then my boy Paddy or Akira Ioane barrels through four Ireland lads, gets over the line, and you start to think,
you were going with Paddy there, and you were talking about Akira Ioane. Who did you mix up?
Paddy Tupelotu. Paddy Tupelotu, come on, it's not fair.
Sorry, I was just thinking, I was like, Akira and Paddy, not really the same kind of names.
Paddy Ioane's playing for Connacht these days.
Come on now. I just got my massive Kiwis mixed up there for a second.
There are many of them.
But yeah, like again, I think there was one of the great things about it, like I think as a fan, you never really felt comfortable during the game, but watching the game back, Ireland never look uncomfortable. The players are always, they kind of always have it in the back of their head that they have this. And I think that's, reading back on some of the stuff you hear before the tour, like Easton Sayer was saying, he was talking to Johnny Sexton before the first test, and they're like, we're here to win a series, we're not here to win a game. Like, and I think that confidence really built in the second test, and it was really obvious in the third test. Now, look, we got a little bit lucky with the Andrew Porter not getting a red card. I understand the difference that the referees point out in the two, between that and the, I'm afraid not to say any name.
Ring Rose red card.
I'm afraid with the Ring Rose, the Ring Rose tackle, but it is a difference between like a forceful hit and an absorbing hit. Now, were we very lucky it wasn't a red? Bloody hell, we were very lucky. I was very surprised it wasn't red.
Just been cited this evening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And again, like Angus Tava drove with force to the face. Porter kind of absorbed, but if that was the other way around, that was a Connacht player and that was the hit, I'd be like, that's a red every day. So, you know.
Yeah, let's touch on that, because I at the time was happy with the yellow because of what you said, because I think when the referee actually, they brought up the referee's points that they look at when deciding it, and one of the deciding factors is force, like do you drive up, are you absorbing, and I thought the yellow was fair, and then especially with the Ryan Jones news that just came out this week, which is awful, being diagnosed with dementia at 41, it brings it kind of back on to realization that any head contact is just not good and we need to move away from it. So in hindsight, yes, that should have been a red card. At the time, I was happy with it because, as you kind of said, Westy, Porter is not driving up. He's not driving in. He's absorbing. But as Sam, I'm sure you would probably bring up as well, and Westy as well, there's no attempting at hinging from Porter. There's no attempting at getting low, and it's head-on-head contact, and we just need to get that out of the game. So,
that's... Yeah, but that's exactly the issue, and that's why I think it should be red. Like, I understand the absorbing the tackle thing, but I think that's complete horseshit, because like Retallick's gone off with a broken cheekbone, so there's force there, be that his force or not. Porter has never put himself in a position to make a legal tackle, and the fact that he wasn't quick enough to drive forward and that he just kind of let it go back, he gets lucky in that manner, but he's not changed an attitude. He's not put himself in a position to get and make a legal tackle. He's not put himself in a position to protect both his and the opposition's head. I think that you spoke about it last week, Westy, and it was really well put. The referee, when giving the red card to the New Zealand player on the hit for Ringrose, went through it and he explained. And one of the things he said is, you were never in a position to make a legal hit. And that's exactly what Porter wasn't. He was standing up straight and he got lucky. And Ireland benefited from that luck, because seeing it out with 14 men for the rest of the game and having to lose an extra player to bring on a front row wouldn't have been able to see it out. Like, you know, maybe we could have dug deep, but it's very, very tough to envision any idea where that happened. And Ireland did get really lucky on that. But I think that it's something that needs to be stamped out of the game. You need to be protecting people's heads by making sure accidents don't happen, not making sure intent doesn't happen, because that's something they've already tried to remedy. Making sure accidents don't happen by making people not go near standing upright tackles. I think we got really lucky with that one. I'm delighted as an Irish fan that we won it, but it does, yeah, and it's even worse with that news from this week. Like, that's, you know, that's gonna, it's gonna become more prevalent, because rugby wasn't ever about hitting people high until this new generation of rugby players in the last 20 years, where everyone has to, like, I was reading Keith Earls' book and he was talking about getting up to 15 stone, putting on muscle, being dominant. That wasn't the way rugby was played back in the day. Big tackles were big tackles, but most of the time they were wrapped tackles and there was a chance for an offload or, you know, more scrappy kind of play. But now everything is so systematic in its approach that being dominant in the tackle and stopping them from offloading and stuff has become so prevalent that headshots have actually become, I think, even more dangerous because of the size of people, but also more common. I think if you watch back on old Lions tours, there's a lot of just these wrapping and pulling and kind of wrestling tackles, and that they're not as common anymore. It's these big one-off shots.
Yeah, I think it just comes to the evolution of the game. Players get bigger, stronger, faster. It happens in every sport. But I taking the long-term effects aside, taking that a whole aspect out of it, are we happy that, you know, someone who intentionally, I don't think anyone goes into intentionally, the Ring Rose red card was way more dangerous looking than the Porter one, but both are going to be red cards, or should be red cards. Are we happy that that's the same punishment, like, for someone who accidentally goes out of his way, or accidentally does it, rather than someone who is dangerous and goes in full, like, 100 mile an hour? You know, that's, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I'm just saying, like, should there be an even more? Is it just deciding the length of penalty? Yeah, that's probably
that's the whole idea. A game is 80 minutes, which means that your red card is only going maximum amount of time it can affect a player's ability to play in that game is going to be 80 minutes. So the longevity of the punishment comes after the fact. A more dangerous tackle gives you more of a ban, and that's how it should be. You can only punish someone for the extent of what's left in a game. That's just how it is in a game situation. Red cards are not equal to each other for unequal events because of the subsequent ban afterwards, or the subsequent punishment afterwards, be that a fine or whatever it is. And that's how it should be. Both are red cards. The danger aspect of it should be taken into account after the fact with a citing commissioner or a fine or whatever they want to do about it. Usually it's a ban, but maybe starting affecting people's pockets will affect them more than bans, you know. But that's in my mind, that's the only way that it needs to be done, because you can't look at severity of punishment in a finite 80 minute stretch. Like there'd be too many things. There'd be 100 different spectrum colors of cards.
Yeah, no, that's fair. We might start a new segment, lads, for Gobshire of the Week. I think our first Gobshire of the Week might be Andy Powell. So I think if you haven't seen what he's tweeted, or also gotten into an argument with Gareth Anscombe's wife, he's now come out and said that he thought it was Gareth that he was talking to. And that was his mistake, which, if you believe that, then fair enough. But we won't get into that. Let's talk a bit more about the game. Sam, what impressed me most was, obviously, we saw the first half performance. We saw that kind of in the second test as well. We knew that for 40 minutes we were good enough to beat them, whatever that. I think we all feared that's the first 10 minutes, second half. I was saying, like, if they can keep them out for that first 10 minutes, it'll go a long way to getting the win. They conceded twice in the first 10 minutes, and Ireland didn't seem that shaken up by it. Was that surprising to you? And how impressive is that going forward, that they kind of took that in their stride and just kept moving forward?
It was surprising to me as someone with experience of sport in Ireland, because that's the type of thing that the All Blacks have done to us time and time again. And I was worried that an early score would kind of shake them, because they were in a position of power and they were in a position that they're not necessarily used to being in, which is being absolutely dominant in it. I thought it was brilliant in the manner in which they held out for the second 40 minutes. They put the pressure on, they got the extra scores they needed. They were really smart with their use of penalties and kicking, taking time off the 10 minutes that Porter had in the bin. I thought that all added up to extremely smart play, and it was really encouraging, because if you look back at the other wins against New Zealand, I don't want to say they were all absolute blowouts, because that's not true. Some of them were close enough on the scoreboard. But this is the only one where I feel like New Zealand really actually fully tested us, gave us that scare, and we managed to hold it off. In the past, we pushed them and played out of our skin and managed to get that win. But I think that this game had everything. It had the blowing them out of it in the first half, developing the lead, getting the scare, putting us under the pressure. And I think Andy Farrell will be the happiest man out of all of them, because he's going into a World Cup next year now with this experience, with a strong New Zealand team wounded, coming back and putting the pressure on us the way that a team will do in a World Cup quarter or semi or final. You know, you're never going to get a blowout win in the final or a quarter final or semi final. And New Zealand have done that, and they've tested us, and Ireland have, like, they've answered that call. Every single person that played on the day played out of their skin, and they were all relentless in the manner that they did it. They stuck to the game plan as well. They didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater when New Zealand scored two early tries or two quick tries, or capitalized on Sexton not scoring that penalty. So I think it was a phenomenal second half on top of an amazing first half. The first half was one of the best halves of rugby I've ever seen Ireland play. It probably is the best half of rugby I've ever seen them play, from just an overall experience of watching, and from just everyone purring. And the second half, they were getting tested a little bit, answering all those tests, answering all those questions, and then proceeding to implement their game on New Zealand again.
You said a few moments ago, Sam, that the players stood up and answered the call. Would you say they answered Ireland's call?
I was just about to say that joke, Westy.
Oh, I got there before you.
Damn it. Westy, Sam mentioned Andy Farrell. I think like 2 years ago, none of us would have been shocked, or not none of us shocked maybe, but a lot of people were calling for his head 2 years ago. And now it has totally flipped around. A fantastic Six Nations. They've won a test series down in New Zealand for the first time ever. Let's talk. Can we talk about what he has actually done with this Irish team and how impressive it is?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And I think the first thing that we have to say is, like, a lot of people are, you know, ever since they kind of stopped hating on Andy Farrell, they've kind of been like, oh, he, you know, got rid of the old Joe Schmidt system. But I think you don't have one without the other. you need to have learned that control the controllables game plan. You need to have won these big games to then implement a more play what you see type of game plan that we see them playing now. I think we first had to have that bedrock of knowing that we had the ability to squeeze out games before we could then build on the individual skills of certain players to move into a more more expansive game plan. But yeah, it's an amazing feat. And again, we even saw it like that first Six Nations. And again, like we have to remember, Andy Farrell probably had one of the hardest starts to coaching that anyone can have. I know he was coming from within the system, but he's named head coach and then the world shuts down for 2 years. So how can you really implement a game plan when your guys aren't playing as much rugby as you thought they would? And it's definitely, in my opinion, it's a game plan that that feeds off what the provinces are doing in a certain extent. We know that that's how New Zealand used to run their teams. I don't know if they still do. Maybe they still do. But they used to all play a similar brand of rugby. It was a directive that came down from New Zealand rugby. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that's a directive coming from the RFU with Ireland, but we see the likes of Leinster and Connacht and Ulster, and you know they're asking for it in Munster as well, to play this more heads-up, expansive brand of rugby. And we see that I don't know if it's a directive from the Irish team, but it's definitely linked to our success, because you see the likes of Pete Wilkes from Broad on the tour, because that's the type of rugby his team are playing. It's the type of rugby that they want them to push through. And I'm sure I would be baffled if Andy Farrell wasn't working closely with Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster, because it is a game, and they've admitted it's based off what Leinster do. But it's so impressive. We heard them say in interviews that, like, we're working on something, it'll click. And now that it has clicked, it's kind of a snowball. You know, when this type of game plan works for you and you know it can work, you become a little bit more adventurous with it. You can build on it. I think that's how we're getting these successes. It would have been very easy for this group of players to lose that first test and go, balls, we're fairly well beaten and that the game plan doesn't work, out the window. But no, they backed themselves. They knew this game plan worked because it did work against the All Blacks in November. And now here we are, Andy Farrell sitting under, he's played the All Blacks 4 times in the last 12 months. He's beaten them 3. It's outstanding work.
But seven as a coach.
Why didn't they win the fourth game though, Wesley? Questions have to be asked about that.
You mean the first test of the tour?
Yeah.
Because our set piece didn't really work.
Hashtag Farrell out.
And do you want me to be really controversial? Well, controversial from my own opinions. Because Sexton went off so early.
Oh, that's it. I haven't heard that opinion before.
I'm getting the tattoo on my chest. I've gone full Johnny Sexton.
You're like on board.
I am the board.
Okay, we'll get talking about that actually later. I want to get all the positive stuff out of the way, and then we can get questions. We got some questions in. Sam, what about New Zealand? A lot of talk about how bad they were this series. How good of a New Zealand team is it? How the coaching scenario, is it fair to Ireland to say that's a bad All Blacks team, or is there some truth in it?
There's a little bit of truth in it, but you're always going to come up against a team in some sort of peak or trough or ebb or flow or whatever kind of words you want to put on it. There's, you know, no two teams are ever going to be completely matched in terms of form or time of the season or your home ground or whatever it is. You're always going to come up against that, and that New Zealand team are not, they're not going through the best of times at the moment, but much like Ireland a couple of years ago, we weren't going through the best of times, and it's only two or three small fixes away from being brilliant. There's a lot of criticism coming from the media on this side of the world, I don't know about in New Zealand, about the standard of some of those players, and there's some ridiculous takes being thrown out there. I heard last week people writing off Tuivasa Sheck saying that he was going to be a defensive liability, even though the Blues were defensively unbelievable all season until the final against Crusaders, one of the most dominant teams in the history of club rugby. There's, you know, talk about Dalton Papali'i not being good enough back row, and it's like laughing at that, because everyone's if you watch Super Rugby, you've seen these players, they're phenomenal set of players, and you know, from the outside looking in, it looks like maybe the coach he's lost a little bit of the faith of the backroom team or the players or the New Zealand public or whatever it is, and maybe it needs a refresh, because that group of players is capable of winning the World Cup in a year and a half's time, and that refresh might be something changing in the backroom team. It might not be faster going. I personally think it probably will be faster going, because that's kind of the easy, quick fix. It's easier to do that than to ship out 23 players. But no, that New Zealand team are, you know, they're not playing their best rugby at the moment. They're on like record losing streak for New Zealand teams, but it doesn't mean that they're not an unbelievable team. There's multiple World Cup winners there. There's players like Ardie Save, who will be in the line and talking for World Player of the Year this year, even though his team are struggling. So, you know, Will Jordan has shown time and time again, he can just make mincemeat out of absolutely anyone. So it's unfair on Ireland to say they played a bad New Zealand team because they didn't. They played a team in New Zealand, I think the first team in the professional era to win a three-game series. France won a two-game series in 94. And the Lions haven't won there since the early 70s. It's 1971. So, you know, regardless of how New Zealand are doing, going there is not easy. And that Irish team can be super proud of what they've done. I think the management, although it frustrated me going into the second test and the third test, I think the management, you know, when the tests were available and the win was there, I think that they managed the team very well. I think that the midweek test with the Maoris gave everyone an opportunity to feel involved in it, but the keeping of the team, and it was justified in the results. I would be kicking and screaming if they had lost the three of them and they hadn't changed anyone here. But no, they've made their point. They took a risk by not changing it up at all between the first and second test, and it paid off. And I think it would be doing a massive injustice to Ireland to criticize that New Zealand team, because, you know, there's every single player in that 23 you would look at and you would have a good hard think about putting them into an Irish team. Like, they're all very, very capable rugby players. They'd all get into any team in the world. So I think you do just have to give the props to Ireland for an amazing series.
Yeah, the first half, if you just isolate that first half, it did look like a team that nearly had given up on the coach. Like, that's how sloppy the All Blacks were in that first half. But the opening 10 minutes of that second half, and the second half as a whole, the fight that All Blacks showed, it didn't look like that. You know, I don't think they have given up on the coach. Well, they've never sacked a coach before. Doing it this close to the World Cup, it would be a big call. I know South Africa was that when did Razzie had like 18 months, didn't he, when he took over South Africa?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, so, he went in like November of the year before. So
yeah, so it'd be interesting to see what they do. As I said, it'd be the first time they'll ever have done it. Well, yeah, other coaches have mutually agreed to leave. I don't know if it was a sacking rather than it could have been a sacking, but it'd be interesting what they do. Look, they're New Zealand. They're always still going to be very good. All they have to do is click a bit of form and they're going to win the World Cup, as we said, easily. They're definitely not a bad team. They might just go, they're just going through a rough thing of form.
But that whole idea of it being the first time they've ever sacked a coach and they don't do it, like, you got to take everything as a first. You know, it's the first time that New Zealand have lost a three-game series. It's the first time that New Zealand have been on this bad losing streak. It's the first time they've dropped out of the top three in the world rankings. So there's going to be firsts. That's going to happen. They have ready-made replacements there in the country. They have like Scott Robertson, or even Schmidt is part of this kind of backroom team. And Gatland is knocking around, and we might kind of scoff a little bit at Gatland because of the last Lions tour, but Jesus, he has some record with Wales. And if they want to win something and win something quick, Gatland could be like their Razzie. He could easily turn that team into a winning team. It might not be pretty, but they would be very fucking hard to beat.
Yeah, speaking of coaches, you kind of touched on it, but we have to give Pete Wilkins a massive shout out. A coincidence that they bring a Connacht coach and it's their first win series in New Zealand? I think not. All joking aside, fantastic for him. Fantastic experience. If Connacht are looking at him as Andy Friend's eventual replacement, which they probably are, the experiences that he's probably gained on that tour alone will be fantastic going forward. So, and he seems to be very well liked by all the coaching staff and players. So congrats to Pete Wilkins on that.
He's center on media duties as well. Sideline chats every game.
Fantastic stuff. So we got a few questions in from Twitter, so I want to take a few of them. This actually touches on the Sexton subject, so we'll talk about Sexton now. Julian sent in a tweet saying, can Ireland win the Rugby World Cup with Sexton at 10? I'll start with that. Yes, we definitely can win the World Cup with him at 10, but we also need a pretty decent backup as well, and I don't know if we have that yet, but we'll get into that. Westy, you seem to have changed your tune a little bit, so why don't you explain yourself?
No, it's not that I've changed my tune at all. Look, you can't underestimate the value of Johnny Sexton to that team. And he's just played three games back-to-back against the All Blacks, all three of which he came off. He was forced off and still managed to play the following week. So there's no question to his ability to play these games. There's no question to his durability, really, anymore. And now, look, at a year is a long time when you're 38 years old in terms of sport. But what is a problem, and what will always continue to be a problem, is that we've kind of heard it be acknowledged almost for the first time this tour, is that Joey Carberry hasn't really stepped up in the opportunities that he's been given. Now, again, I do feel like the odds are always stacked against him, because he's only really been given opportunity when he hasn't been playing, because he's been out injured for a couple of months. So I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming the management of him and kind of force him into the squad. We're already having talks now that Kieran Frawley is the answer to 10, even though he's played two games of 10 that anybody's actually seen. So I don't know what the contingency plan is. The only thing we know for certain is that Johnny Sexton is a world beater. Like, that's just a fact at this stage. Whether what you feel about his age or his durability is probably valid, you know, or is your own to feel, but you can't deny the results that he gets, and the way that team plays when he's on the pitch is different. And he's not shying away from Connolly, he's not shying away from carries, he's not shying away from anything. He's front and center to everything that we do. I do think it's a big problem that we're not pushing somebody new, that we're not blooding another player, but I'm kind of just sick of saying it at this stage. I'd rather just sit back and enjoy the fact that we won a series in New Zealand, that, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to retire at the end of the World Cup. And like, if the Roosters don't come home before then, they'll come home on the 1st of November when we're home for the World Cup and we don't have an international team.
Yeah, I want to not talk about the World Cup necessarily too much, obviously acknowledge it, but yeah, 100%, let's enjoy this series win. We've been big criticizers of how they go about stuff, but still, they've done something they've done before. It's a fantastic group of players. Sexton is at the heart of all that's good with Ireland, which we've acknowledged previously, but it's also our biggest weakness. Is Sexton is so important to us that when he's not there, it's a different story. But the topic has been brought up this week of he's our best ever player. Obviously, previously everyone would have said Brian O'Driscoll. It's a good actual question to ask, Sam. What do you think? Is this a bit recency biased, or do you think Sexton has surpassed O'Driscoll as Ireland's greatest ever player?
It's going to be really hard to speak about this because I put Ronan O'Gara in my all-time Ireland 15 over him.
Do you know who didn't? This guy.
I know. And I still do prefer Rog. Just my memories of Rog is the nostalgic side of things. But I think I would personally say that, yeah, Sexton is probably our best ever player. I think O'Driscoll was probably our most talented in a team that wasn't maybe as talented as this team. He was a flair player. He was one of the best in Europe at the time. He was amazing, his longevity, his accolades, you know, going on to Captain Lions and those sort of things. But I think Sexton has done it with Leinster, he's done it with Ireland, he's done it with the Lions. You know, he's won tours, he's won this tour now again, he's won Grand Slams, he's got match winning drop goals in France, he's rallied and maneuvered and generaled Leinster into being one of the most successful teams in Europe for, you know, 10 plus years. I think it'd be hard pressed to argue against him at this stage. It's hard to change and it's hard to compare eras as well. I think O'Driscoll was something special in an era maybe where it wasn't as good. You know, there were some good teams in that. He did win a few things, but I think this current Ireland team being as good as it is also a lot to do with the fact that Sexton is as good as he is. So not just is he that good on the pitch, he also brings up everyone around him. I think there's no denying that everyone else plays better when he's playing. That's, you know, the negative side of that being that we will at some point realize what it's like when he's not there, and we'll have to deal with that. And that's something that I still feel strongly about, and Westy's spoken about already, and it's something that we'll continue to speak strongly about right up until he retires. But yeah, you do have to, I think, give him the credit for being the best player in Irish history that's not called Bundiaki.
Nice. I was wondering when something was coming. Yeah, you touched on it there as well. Like, yeah, the reason that we keep saying we need to get someone else in there is because we realize that when he does retire, there's going to be a bit of a jump off a cliff here. And the people who are saying, no, keep him in, are the people who would be like, oh, we're not as good anymore. What's happening here? And we're like, yeah, ding dong, this is what happens. Westy, though, is it sort of like the quarterback debate in NFL? Like, a 10 will always be more important to a team than an outside center in terms of how a team runs. So is that harsh on to compare to Brian O'Driscoll when, you know, Sexton gets the ball nearly every time out of a ruck, whereas Brian O'Driscoll maybe has to, you know, bide and wait his time a little bit? Where do you fall on this debate?
I think it's kind of valid to a degree. Like, your 10 is going to touch the ball more times than your centers necessarily. Now, it does depend on your game plan, right? It depends the way a team play. You know, certain teams play a little bit more off 9. You know, in the first test, let's say, it was way more down to how Aaron Smith was delivering that ball, because a lot of times he was skipping Beauden Barrett, or a lot of times he was delivering to a pod inside him. So it's not always about, you know, your 10 isn't always going to be, let's say, the fulcrum of your team, but it happens quite a lot. And especially the way Ireland play, and especially the way we're playing now, it's not a like for like comparison. But I think while I acknowledge that you have, like, the time is relative, in the sense that Ireland beating France away for the first time ever, in a lot of regards, is, you know, was the beating of the All Blacks 20, however long ago years it was when Brian O'Driscoll scored those two or three tries. You know, that achievement is relative to the time where beating the All Blacks was something that never would have happened, you know, let alone beating France away. So I don't think that one person's accomplishments are necessarily better at face value, but I think with the consistency and the trajectory of the Irish team, again, first off, I'd say no Brian O'Driscoll, no Johnny Sexton. Like, if you take one away, you don't have, if you take Brian O'Driscoll away, you don't have the platform for Sexton to grow and develop into the player that he is now. Again, and of course, his hard work and his talent. I'm not downplaying that, but I think maybe he's always going to be, and again, because he is a headline stealer as well, so much because of the, you know, people, the questions of his age and the questions of his captaincy and this, that, and the other, because you hear his name so much and we've been so successful, I think it is, there is maybe a bit of recency bias or that, or as you say, like whatever you call it, quarterback syndrome attached to it. But no, I do think that if he's not the best player in Irish history, it's pretty bloody close at this stage, because what else can he now do? There's only one thing in my mind that you told us we're not going to talk about. So there's only one thing in my mind that we need to do now. But again, you can't say that, oh, well, Brian just never beat the All Blacks. Like, you have to put it in context. Like, that was a generation of players that weren't going to beat the All Blacks. Maybe in his last few years, we had a chance. But
yeah, I think it's 1A, 1B sort of at the situation kind of now. Do you know what I mean? I think you're totally right. O'Driscoll was the first and the best at the time. And it happens through all sports, basketball. Michael Jordan is everyone's GOAT. LeBron comes along, and no matter what LeBron does, he'll never probably beat Jordan to a lot of people's eyes, because Jordan was the first. O'Driscoll was the first. One thing that does go against Sexton, no gloves. Never wore gloves. And that, you have to take points away for that. O'Driscoll rocked some sexy fingerless gloves.
O'Driscoll inspired Wessie's haircut as well.
That's also true. That is
blonde
also true.
Highlights, blonde flowing highlights. Locks.
Yeah. I have no highlights. How dare you?
History books would suggest different. We've seen the photos. We can maybe share them on our Twitter. What do you think, Wessie?
I have no comment. No such photos exist. Anything that you showed me, photoshopped.
Yeah, we hacked your cloud.
Drunkenly saved you from some bad highlights, actually, in China. I gave you a solid mohawk at 3 a.m. with a pair of scissors because you were so devastated about your terrible highlights.
Oh, well, that's a story for a different time.
I have never been to Asia. I don't know what you're talking about.
Never left Balna. How dare you? yeah, I just want to chat that debate because it's a good, okay, they're always fun, those debates to have. But definitely, 1A, 1B, I think, is O'Driscoll Sexton. Another question from Brian Duffy. Westy, I'll throw this one back to you again. Do we all agree that a Bundy Robbie centre combination works best for Ireland moving forward?
Oh, that pass for the Robbie try was just poetry. Like, and, you know, again, look, super biased, but I got no problem with it. Like, Bundy has been everywhere in these games when he came on. And he came on as a replacement in the first two, and then again on Saturday morning when he started. I think our working Henshaw and Bundy are just so good to watch. But again, I will say, and I don't want to get too carried away, I would say that we've got three world-class centres because we rotate them. Now, we rotate them because we need to, because two of them keep getting injured in Bundy's class. But it's why we've developed this depth in the position. And that's now what we have to start doing in other positions where we might be a little bit lighter. We need to starting somebody with the other starter, you know, doing that rotation. I think we've built really well for these two guys. But yeah, I mean, what would you give to see Henshaw back in a Connacht jersey and have that centre partnership?
Why not? Who says no?
Henshaw, apparently.
Yeah, that's true, actually. He did actually say it. Yeah,
he's trying to do a deal, yeah.
Yeah, like, but you mentioned Bundy. Like, I was kind of wondering, would he ever be back to his best? Because, like, he was so banged up at the end of the Lions tour. You know,
he's strapping in the pictures after the game. Like, the lad looks like he's held together with tape.
Like. Yeah, and, like, he's put a lot of miles on him. He plays so physically that it's understandable that his body would be beaten up. But he just seems to be able to churn out these performances at a high-class level. And it's incredible. I think him and Robbie as well give you such a defensive edge. You know, Robbie Henshaw was incredible the other day. Defensively, he just is probably one of the best defensive centres in the world. Is that recency bias? I think he is. He's up there, right?
At the moment, he is, yeah. He'd be in the conversation, I think, for European Player of the Year.
No, sure. Van der Vleer. Has to be
Van der Vleer as well, yeah. But Robbie would be in the conversation for it because of what he's able to do. If he wasn't injured as much this season, I think there'd be a lot more chat about him. But what he can do in terms of sucking up and just completely quenching potential attacks by getting out of that line at 13 and just sucking the player in, wrapping them up, getting them behind the game line is unbelievable. I think Westie put it the best. I'm gonna be not biased here, and just record this one for future reference. But yeah, Westie put it the best where he said, like, our best center pairing is two of three. We have three phenomenal players there. I think Ringrose has changed my mind about him. I thought he was brilliant at the start, and then I didn't think he kicked on to be the player that people gave him, you know, the potential to become. And I think he was getting overhyped for a while. In the last year or so, I've been so impressed with him. You know, since he didn't get on the Lions tour, since then, I think he's been unbelievable. Defensively, he's really sound. He links up really well. I think with either Bundy or Robbie inside him, he's outstanding. I think Robbie's best position is at 13, but I think any two of those three is sensational. And then with Hume in the mix and potentially like McCluskey coming in there, and then even further down behind it, you know, if you've got the likes of Chris Farrell or Tom Farrell or Tom Daly, there's a great depth there. But because those three are so good, that depth aren't going to be able to get that experience at the international level. And that's such a good problem for Ireland to have.
What about, yeah, let's get the Daily Mail back in an Irish squad. Stat. Pronto. We'll touch on another one before we get... A lot of the questions were sort of towards the Autumn International, so we can touch on that as well. But Brian Quinn asked a question. Playing Furlong for 70 minutes in a game is still a big risk. He is the one player that injured. We don't have a backup. Beelum only gets 10 and 15 minutes a game against his big opponents. Was it smart to play as if Furlong can't be injured? Need more of the Viking. Look, this is sort of a broad question again, looking forward without talking too much about the World Cup. Sam, where we have obviously a few stalwarts, Sexton is one of them, Furlong is definitely one of them, where that the drop off from that, you know, elite level is definitely probably a smaller bit, you know, a bit of a drop off to the next level, probably not again due to the fall of the player, more the experience they're getting. Looking forward, maybe again we can touch on the internationals, are we looking to see that a lot more heavy game time for the in air quotes the backups?
Yeah, I'd like to see it. I'm a big believer in Finlay Beelum. I think his record against the All Blacks stands for itself. Just 4 out of 5 wins. You know, he's been there, done that. And the fact that Furlong plays 70 minutes, you know, the coaching staff mightn't have the same worries about it as we do as fans. The coaching staff might have complete understanding of Furlong's capabilities. He's a freak athlete. He's able to move the ball. He plays the way he does. And the game plan might be surrounded on having that 70-10 or that 65-15 split, as opposed to what we've come to just accept as the usual go-to, swapping the entire front row between 50 and 60. And it might be on purpose. They might, you know, try to get Furlong to wear down the new front row a little bit and then bring on Finlay, who isn't maybe as good at the scrummaging side of things, but is very capable in the loose, is a very willing ball carrier, is always good at tackling, he's always around, and he's always getting himself in good positions. So I think that we probably worry about it because we have an understanding of the way tactics work. And that changes from, you know, era to era. At the moment, it's very commonplace to change your front row, even at halftime now in its entirety. But the coaching staff understand the capabilities of Furlong. They understand his fitness and they're happy to go with that. And the same can be said for Sexton. We worry as fans because we're worried about what might happen, and, you know, not seeing him go off. But, you know, Furlong is regularly playing this amount of time and, you know, it's not dampening his game really. Maybe he's not been as good as he was this time last year, but it's been a long season. I wouldn't worry because I'm a big believer in Finlay Beelum. But others from other provinces or other fans of other provinces aren't as big believers in Finlay Beelum, and he's constantly been questioned as the backup. And I think that he's answering that question time and time again. He's involved in all the squads. He's, you know, there's a time when he didn't sign a new deal for Connacht and the worry was because he wasn't getting the Ireland squad, and he's been back in it ever since. He's been involved in most of the big days with Ireland the last 2, 3, 4 years. So
I think it's safe to say that we are Beleemers.
Beleemers.
How about that?
It's not a great like fan nickname.
Is it too close to the bad word?
To believer or bulimic? Because
as I said it made me think of bulimic.
Yeah, I had visions of both when you said it.
Believe. Yeah. It's a work in progress. It's a work in progress. Finlay people, yeah. we'll take, if you have a good nickname for believers of Beelum, let us know. Yeah, we'll talk about the Autumn Series now. Mel McCaughey, who has, Sam, I think you'll appreciate this, his Twitter name is at Mel Piero.
That's pretty tasty.
Do the injured players come back in the Autumn Series? And also other questions about basically, who do we play come in the Autumn Series? Westie, I'll trust one to you. What do you want from the Autumn Series? Do you think that they will experiment, obviously, a bit more with the caliber of games? What do you want to see? What do you think Andy Farrell will do?
I think from our history, we have very much a here and now mentality, in that we're going out to win these games. We're going out to win as many games as possible. We're going out to be the best team that we can put out there. I can't really change my mind on it. Like, you know, I want to win a World Cup, you know. But I also, it's not even about winning a World Cup. It's about winning a Six Nations when you have a few injuries. You know, it's about winning any competition when you have a few injuries. So I think that, as I've kind of said before, and as I keep saying, I'd love to see two or three changes in each game. You know, I'd love to see Treadwell start with Tadhg Byrne in the second row, or even with, maybe I wouldn't start Henderson because I would start maybe Henderson and Ryan, or Tadhg Byrne and Treadwell, or some combination of that, because Henderson has now missed quite a lot of international rugby, so he would need time to get comfortable again in the spot. We've seen how good Peter O'Mahony has been. That's kind of not something you want to let fall, but then maybe, like, I know that's such a good back row, but do you give Gavin Coombs a chance in that jersey with O'Mahony on the bench to come on? Because we have seen in the past O'Mahony can bring that fight and that energy from the bench as well as from a starting position. I think we have to build depth. You know, you said there about Tadhg Furlong and even Porter as well. These guys frequently play over 70 minutes. And I'm not saying that we have to have a South Africa system where we change it at an hour on the hour every game, or on the 50-minute mark in every game, we change our entire tight five and bring them on. But you do have to prepare for an eventuality where right now Porter is banned for a couple of games. What happens in an international window? Who then comes in? I don't think we'll see massive rotation, but I think it's at our own folly that we don't, because as we've already seen, this particular season or the last two seasons have been so long for so many of these players who went on those Lions tours, and even, you know, with the disruptions of COVID, like, they haven't had a normal, if you can even say that anymore, season in so long, that we kind of need to manage our resources now quite well and build the best squad we have going to the World Cup. So it's not a case of bringing, you know, 40 players open for the best. It's bringing 30, any of whom could start any game, really.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You mentioned two guys I want to talk with them, Peter O'Mahony and Tadhg Byrne. Sam, Tadhg Byrne, the joke gets turned around that it's his ball and he just, like, lets people play with it for a while, and eventually he will snatch it back. There was 10 minutes in that second half where he single-handedly stopped the All Blacks from scoring at least one try, where it was just had all the momentum, and then he just gets his body into certain ways and he just snatches onto the ball. And it's just, he's so valuable, isn't he?
Do you think he's better at stealing the ball than Bundy is at stealing people's chicken? That's all I'm saying.
We're going to come to that with O'Mahony, because that guy enjoyed his night.
That 10 minutes where he single-handedly disrupted any bit of go-forward ball the All Blacks were able to get. He just put a stop to it all. There was intercepts, there was turnovers, there was just being a nuisance on the ground. There was all the things that we know he's very, very good at. And he was just exceptional at all of them at the time. It was an unbelievable couple of minutes. And what a performance throughout the entire series. It's just week in, week out, he defies logic in terms of his ability to get in amongst smalls, get in on the ground whenever it is there. And there's questions about whether or not he's big enough for being an international second row. And those questions will still exist, because you'll come up against a New Zealand or a South Africa or France, and they'll have humongous tight fives with massive big second rows. And maybe you could put him out, put him to the back row a little bit just to kind of counteract that and bring in the likes of Henderson. But he was just phenomenal. He was unbelievable. And so was Peter O'Mahony. Like, that Tadhg Byrne, the joke is just such a reality at this stage. I can see it is his ball, and he'll take it back whenever he wants to.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. And it's incredible that, I know obviously time has passed, but, you know, Leinster obviously didn't see him as becoming that player, and then went to Scarlets. They didn't obviously, well, they let him go. I'm sure they probably would have loved to keep him, but didn't go the conventional path. And for the talent that he is now, you would assume that he would just have coasted through all these academies and teams and stuff like that, which is fantastic to see someone do that and still be so good. Well, yeah, let's talk about O'Mahony, because I love O'Mahony. I've loved him for a long time. I loved not just what he can do in the pitch, but what he brings off the pitch, the leadership, the intensity. We saw the best part of that this series, where not only was he fantastic on the pitch, we just can't put a value, I think, what he brings to a dressing room, what he brings to, you know, the team meetings. like you saw how much it meant to him afterwards. He was literally in tears, which I'm not gonna lie, set me off a little bit. And you know, for these young players coming in, the likes of Gavin Coombs, it has to be so valuable to them to experience, to be around him, see what he does day to day, see how much it means to him, see how important it is. And going forward into a World Cup, I'm not saying will he be that player in a year's time, but I want him in a squad. I want him for, as I said, what I just listed there, what he can do around a squad, not necessarily just on a pitch. I think it's vital for what he does. He sets the intensity. I'm sure he does it in trainings. I'm sure he does it in warm-ups. And I think that is invaluable, along with the likes of Sexton, to have not just the one voice, but have several voices. And O'Mahony is definitely one of those voices. And I think he's just, I think he's epic. I think he is my favourite Irish player ever, which is a big call. But even though he plays for Munster, which is tough. That's a tough scene for me, but it is what it is. Westy, what do you think?
Bundy, for listening, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Bundy. He didn't mean it, Bundy. Yeah, I do.
Come on the podcast and tell him what you think.
Speaking of Bundy and O'Mahony, Bundy's like—is he like the babysitter now of the Irish team? He's just running after O'Mahony, making sure he doesn't get arrested or run over by a car. He has time to pick up a chicken out of a snack box. Still manages to save O'Mahony. It was fantastic. But it's great to see them totally enjoy, you know, that massive success, Westy, wasn't it? At the end of the day, they're still human.
Before Westy, you start, just next time you're in Giovanni's, Smurf, make sure you're hiding your chicken box for fear of Westy walking down Oranmore Main Street.
I was going to say, or Bundy himself.
Or Bundy, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah.
What did I do? I didn't take anybody's chicken. You've
stolen many a chicken in your time.
I have, yeah.
Westy, yeah. I forgot my question now. What was this? Oh, yeah. Sorry. Enjoying.
I love chicken. Enjoying, I do. Yeah. I could do some chicken right now. Are you going to the shop?
Are you a one piece or a two piece snack box kind of guy?
Oh, two-piece, what?
Three-piece dinner box.
I'm just asking the question. But Westy, it was great to see them enjoy and let some steam off after a tough, you know, 4 weeks.
It was, and at first I can imagine I'll say, yeah, it was great. Now I'll see some horrible video in the morning of some shenanigans I get up to. But yeah, look, you have to let these guys go out and celebrate. And I don't know what Peter O'Mahony did to incur the wrath of the New Zealand police. I hope it was nothing too serious. But it is, you have to allow them that, like, it's a huge occasion. And I've always said that, like, with things like this have to be celebrated. And I think if you don't celebrate them, that's where you get into the robotic kind of, you know, the negative mentalities in camps, where camps can become quite difficult. Like, if you go out and get that tour win, you have to be able to celebrate. Like, and it's such a historic occasion as well. I would say that from all that I've read, like, this really wasn't a standard tour where you get to see the team out doing things all week during a week. Like, New Zealand did have some COVID restrictions in place. Like, there was outbreaks of COVID in both camps. So you're still a little bit curtailed in that you don't get the full, whatever the full on tour experience is, but you don't, you know, normally years ago, we'd see them out on the rooftop tours of buses or doing, I don't know, skydives or whatever you see them doing sometimes in these places. But, so you had to, at the very least, you have to be able to go out and celebrate. I mean, Peter O'Mahony hasn't seen his family in a month. Like, it has to be worth it for some reason. Like, you know, he makes that sacrifice to pay his test, and geez, man, the man deserves a pint or two after. But as long as they are kept in check by everybody else on the tour, it of course doesn't give them free reign to do whatever they want in New Zealand. Like, I don't think that's how winning a tour series works. Although we'd never know because we've never done it before. So
the rumor has it he was shouting, "Where are you, Gandalf? Come out and fight me like a man." Last question. And it touches on this. How many beers, this is from the couch referee, how many beers do you think they drank per person and then as a squad as well? So how many lads in the squad? What was it, 30?
32, wasn't it?
You got to count the coaching tickets as well. They surely got that.
Let's say 35.
Oh, including the coaching ticket, you're well over 40.
Okay, let's 40 is a nice number to calculate. I'm going to say in the one night, on average, 15 beers per man.
15 beers, 15 pints.
Well, not necessarily pints. Some lads might be on bottles.
Is going down by the fact that Craig Casey can fit one in them.
Sexton is pure minding himself. He's definitely having like a bottle of Corona every hour. He's pure minding himself. Okay, let's say 10. It's 10 beers per man. That's 400 beers in a night. I think that's pretty. I think that's expected, right?
I think that's at average okay expectation, but I think it was way more than that. That's. I think they were on at 7 o'clock in the morning. I think that went long into beers, maybe, and then they moved on to the spirits afwards.
Yeah, see, so spirits are a different game.
Couple of games of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Nag, and going on in that pub. Day, you know?
Yeah, but you have to remember, a lot of them young lads probably can't drink very much. They've grown up in an entirely professional rugby era, and they're all like 23, 24. Like the likes of the Craig Casey's and the Keane Prendergast and the real young lads, I'd say are 3 or 4 in, and they're getting like the butt of the jokes. The lads are sending them over for bags of chips and trying to
yeah.
sober them up.
Oh man, he's no. pure slating. Yeah, he's like, Larmer, get off the vodka cran, will you? Fucking have a pint.
Sending lads next door to the hardware shop to get a skirting ladder.
Yeah, along with banter. Yeah, definitely. A couple of Leinster boys definitely were looking for the cocktail menu as soon as they go in. You just know they're on the strawberry daiquiris. You just know it. Good. Thanks for the question, Counter Free.
Well, Mahoney kicking off because he can't get a Beamish in Wellington.
Yeah. What do you mean? We'll move on. The other series also came to a four. England getting the win over Australia, and then so you two series wins for Northern Hemisphere, you then two series loss. Scotland collapsing late on against Argentina, and Wales losing to South Africa out in the third series as well. Sam, two series wins, two series losses down under or in the Southern Hemisphere. Is the gap getting narrower between the Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere, or is it not enough sample size at the moment to say that?
It's really hard to put your finger on exactly what's happening. Australia aren't in the best of form at the moment. The last couple of years haven't been good for Australian rugby. They had a lot of injuries going into this test. Then you know, they got the win and it was kind of going, okay, well, maybe this is starting to click, you know, that the team might be getting better. And England then, people's question marks about England, given their Six Nations performance last year, but they had a very strong team out. And Eddie Jones is someone you can't write off. He's always got a long-term plan in his mind. So it was hard. It's hard to tell about whether or not it's hard to tell whether or not the gap is closing, because these things come and go so much. And the way the seasons end up, we end up touring at the end of our season and they have a shorter season just before that. And then they come in November and they're a bit off form and people go, oh, well, they're useless now. So it's really hard to tell. I just think that, you know, that England team, that England performance over the test was very good. I think they've gotten the best out of a couple of players. I think that Eddie Jones is probably building towards, you know, the World Cup. He's not as reliant on the Six Nations for that income. The English, the pressure from the ORFU is going to be as much. So I thought for England, it was really good. We were talking about the tie for a long-lasting 70 and that being maybe like a new tactic or a new technique in terms of swapping around. But what about Eddie Jones taking players off in the first half? The Danny Kerr getting subbed on 36 minutes and then winning. So it was completely justified. So criticism of his decision to do that. I think he owns the fact that he made a mistake in the selection. That mistake mightn't have been a mistake beforehand, but the way that the game is panning out, Danny Kerr making a few mistakes and it not going to the way it was. So it was a change. It was a big decision that changed the whole run of the game. But I saw it was being criticized by a couple of former players kind of saying like, oh, it's, you know, so bad for someone's mentality to do that. I think Eddie Jones can just turn around and go, look, we won the game 21-17. And that decision was one of the things that happened in the game. So, all in all, good tour for England, really good. I think that they're in a better position now than people would have thought maybe in the November internationals or the Six Nations. They were kind of, you know, below par. I think it was two wins in the whole Six Nations, but I never write off England or Eddie Jones and, you know, the likes of Billy Vunipola coming back into his better kind of better his lofty standards, and Ellis Genge as well, just running through people for fun. He's going to be such a handful to deal with next year as well. So it's good signs for England. It's good. And I just think it's too hard to tell where the gap is between the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere. New Zealand might be hurting a little bit from not playing any of the South African teams in the last, because, you know, that Super Rugby was cancelled. Then they had Super Rugby Aotearoa and then they had Super Rugby Pacific. And the South African teams, they haven't played them in a couple of years. So maybe that's affecting their players' ability to deal with, you know, that high, hard pressure game. And they're not getting tested as much as the Australian teams haven't. They've not been hitting heights at all.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting topic. And I said, yeah, it's a short sample size, but we'll know eventually when it comes to a World Cup. But I don't think any of the Northern Hemisphere teams are, I don't think any of them were necessarily afraid of the Southern Hemisphere teams, but I feel like that the aura about them maybe has gone away a little bit. I know definitely with Ireland, like even like facing the Haka, I don't, like the third test there, I just don't think it has the same intensity. I don't know, like it's hard to tell.
That third test, when I saw the Haka, I freaked out. I was like, Jesus Christ, lads, they're up for this. And maybe they were too up for it, and that's what ended up stopping them being able to play. But Aaron Smith crying during the warm-up, and then the intensity of that Haka was just unbelievable. And you're reassured by the fact that, like, O'Mahony just stares.
That's what I'm saying. Like, when the camera pans to the Irish boys, they're just kind of like, they're looking at, and then as soon as it finishes, they're into a huddle. Like, there's none of the, like, oh, let's stay and watch and try and match their intent. It's like, it's almost like it's just part of the warm-up now. They're not even, like, really looking at us. Do you know what I mean?
You reckon if you did one of them TV shots where it goes through what everyone's thinking, like, oh, man, he's like, I'm going to fucking kill these people. And seconds, like, I got to play the perfect game. This is what I'm going to do first three sets out. And they get to Mac Hansen. It's like, ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang.
Mac Terry's like, I look incredible right now. I hope the camera really captures how good I look with these locks. Yeah, I think we'll wrap up there, boys. Come to the hour. Connacht, we're back training, doing some preseason stuff this week. They're releasing their new jersey this week, so that's exciting. The build up to the season now kind of starts, and over the next month or so. So that's good news, obviously, for all Connacht fans. Leinster released a new jersey today, boys. I'm not gonna lie, I'm digging it. It was pretty fucking sexy. What do we think?
I think you're done. I think you can leave now.
I'm just saying, Westy. We might see a picture of you in this one as well, like the other one.
You've never seen this alleged picture of me.
I actually have seen the alleged picture, but has the public? We're going to hold it over you like a bargaining chip if you ever decide to leave the podcast. It's like we'll release this photo. You'll never leave.
I'm sorry. How many jerseys have you worn in your life, Smurf? You know you're like constantly changing your allegiances.
I actually,
Ulster, then Leinster, now Connacht. I mean, when you change to Munster, like
I never supported Leinster. I don't think that's just fair to say. I did though. I did when I first moved to Galway. I owned a Leinster hoodie that was a gift for one of my birthdays, and I remember I wore it out. Like, this is back when I knew, you know, very little about rugby, but I wore it out actually with a friend of ours, Lurkin, to a pub, and he goes, do me a favor, will you take the hoodie off? he's like don't wear that around here. I was like, you know what, that's a fair point. I somehow never thought about that. I'll take that off. And I never wore it again, so there you go, Westy, there you go. But I won't succumb to pressure by, who was the player again, Luke Fitzgerald, was it?
No, it was a job. I was working for Bank of Ireland. I had to wear a Leinster jersey.
Jamie Heaslip was there.
Yeah, he slipped. Oh, he slipped.
It's not like Jamie Heaslip came over and was like, put on the jersey or I'll crush you. I mean, I probably would have done it, but I was there for work.
Sure. Yeah, sure. You just want to be besties with the Heaslip. All right, boys, we'll wrap up there.
Tweet, do you?
You can be on his podcast whenever he starts it. We'll wrap up there, boys. We'll leave you to enjoy the fantastic weather. I hope everyone listening at home is enjoying the fantastic weather. I am going to have a cold shower because I am disgustingly sweaty, and I advise everyone does the same. Cheers, boys. Chat to you next week.
See you, everybody.